drinking cues, it's so much fun.
Hey everybody, welcome into Show Notes. Just a reminder to sign up for our weekly newsletter, where we offer some timely perspectives, links to all the headlines that we cover in Show Notes, the most recent video uploads, and the main essay for our work as well. Just head over to unftr.com, click on the contact button in the right corner of the navigation, and fill out your email. It's that simple. 99 is running a special right now. It's a discount that you can only find in the newsletter, so go ahead and do that. And remember, it's free to sign up. We're never going to abuse that privilege or sell your information or anything like that. And this week is also going to feature a special reader submission from our resident Irish author, Bobby McDee, who waxes poetic in a timely little piece titled Governor Hochul's Easter Rising. So, looking forward to that. Hey, 99.
Hi.
What's good?
Headlines. We got things. Trump was indicted and
what?
Had to sit in court like a fucking loser.
He looks so sad.
Yeah.
So sad.
Big lie.
Yeah. Anything else going on in the world?
Something good happened in Wisconsin?
Yeah. A progressive beat a establishment Democrat.
Yeah, that's good.
We like that. Filled the ranks.
Yes.
What about with you?
Let's see. I'm about a month and a week away from seeing Taylor.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we're getting there. I got to figure out what I'm going to wear. I'm going to do early Taylor. It's basically turned into like Comic-Con with the outfits. Yeah, so.
So what are you thinking?
Like either between self-titled and Speak Now, because curly hair. So that's usually sparkly dress, cowboy boots.
Like ponytails, pigtails, that like early? Is there real early version?
No, that's Child Taylor, who was not famous yet.
Okay.
But no, she had curly hair.
More country themed?
Yeah.
Are you thinking flannels and all that?
No, I said sparkly dress and cowboy boots.
Sparkly dress.
That's what she wore.
Okay.
Gotta watch the Fearless tour.
Do I?
I mean, you would enjoy it.
Okay.
Why wouldn't you?
No reason.
Okay.
No reason. When the girls were little and I would drive them to school, there was one album. I don't know.
Red.
Was it Red?
Yeah.
That's the one we rocked over and over again.
I was in college.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that hold up? Do you like it?
Oh, 100%. It's one of the best. It's her most recent re-record.
I'm going to let you finish.
Oh, that was.
Was that the one?
No. Oh. That was. Was that Fearless or Speak Now? It was one of the two.
Hmm.
Fucking asshole. But he likes the Jews again. Did you see that?
He does? Where is he?
He posted on Instagram that he likes Jewish people again because he watched 21 Jump Street and Jonah Hill made him laugh. This is not a bit. This is real. That is what Kanye West said. Thanks,
so
Jonah.
Great?
Yeah. I'm surprised he even knew Jonah Hill was Jewish. His real last name is Feldstein.
Huh.
So I guess he just assumed that might be anti-Semitic in and of itself.
Look at Jonah.
Uh-huh.
Uniting the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Good for him.
Yeah. What's Channing Tatum doing for us?
Right?
Nothing.
Well, just taking your shirt off a whole lot in movies, right?
Well, mostly the Magic Mike movies.
Right.
And This Is the End, where he was like a dog.
I finally saw that movie.
Wow.
So much fun.
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a good
Danny
one.
Danny McBride is really a gem.
He's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see the trailer for the new Barbie movie?
I did.
It looks amazing.
I don't know how to feel about
it. It's going
to
be incredible.
It's surreal.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a mind fuck though.
Michael Cera is going to be in it.
Sure, why not?
Someone named Alan. He's not a Ken. Everyone's a Ken, but he's just Alan.
It's very Michael Cera.
Yeah, so.
It's perfect.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, folks, let's get into some headlines. We're going to start off on the other side of the world, in China, once again. So we had a few people email in, and there were, I don't know if they were emails or comments, and we'll get to them, wondering about China's new diplomatic push and what it portends for the yuan and maybe the world's reserve currency, if they're, you know, settling deals and making loans, all those kind of things. So we'll address some of that as we go. But in the spirit of those wondering about their diplomatic entree into the Middle East and what it portends for U.S. dominance in the region, I would direct you to Spencer Ackerman, who used to be on Substack. Prior to that, I think he's done some stuff for The Intercept. I know he wrote for The Guardian UK for a long time. And now he's writing on Ghost, which is a Substack-like platform where the writers have more control. One of his reasons for moving from Substack to Ghost was he was looking at, I guess, the ever-increasing number of unfiltered and very hard-right stances that were there, and he was getting more and more uncomfortable with that and some of the ways that they were, I guess, promoting the writers, you know, which ones through the Substack algorithm were actually getting more FaceTime. And he felt like it was just sort of cheapening the entire platform. So he moved over to Ghost, where he's got some more control. He has an editor who looks at every single thing that he does. And he's one of my favorite foreign affairs reporters and has been for a very long time. So with respect to China, he has a great piece titled "The Indispensable Nation Learns It Might Not Be Great Power Competitive." So this is an outstanding analysis in typical Ackerman plain language with some opposing viewpoints that were vetted and considered in a way that kind of contextualizes thing rather than rationalizes it. And Spencer has a way of kind of breaking down complicated relationships in history. So what he does in the piece is he goes into what is happening with China brokering a deal between Saudi Arabia and Iran. This is a very big deal. This is, I don't want to say it's monumental, because I think we put too much emphasis on what happens in the Middle East, and obviously having two wars there over the past 20 years and all of the murky ties that we have specifically with Mohammed bin Salman and, you know, MBS in Saudi Arabia, and the way that we've managed the Iran negotiations and probably helped deliver a hardline administration when the Trump administration came in and broke off the Iran nuclear deal. So Spencer contextualizes all of that in a really plain spoken way, which is really what I appreciate about his writing. But it's a very in-depth piece, and it'll give you some idea about the changing of the guard, so to speak, with the superpowers that are meddling both with finances, diplomacy, trade, all those kind of things. So check that out. We'll leave a link to it. And of course, there is the Trump indictment. And because it's all the media will be talking about for days and weeks on end, just a sober reminder of the U.S. hypocrisy from Jeremy Scahill is in order, who rightly calls into question what constitutes a crime when it comes to U.S. leaders. So, yes, interesting that Trump is the first sitting, you know, former president to be indicted of a crime and felonies specifically. We know that this is just the beginning of multiple indictments that are, you know, yet to come. There's, I think, the one that people are most interested in is what happens in Georgia with the election meddling and things like that. There will be forever the January 6th hangover and what can potentially come of that with the crimes against the United States. The Georgia one is probably the one that has the most teeth. This one, I can't imagine him doing time or anything like that. But the reason I wanted to pull the Intercept piece by Jeremy Scahill is that he says, you know, it's interesting what surfaces as a crime, what is allowable in our culture and not allowable. So infidelity paid with hush money and, you know, and other people like Michael Cohen actually already paying the price for that and going to jail, now coming back to roost in the White House and affecting Trump. But then he goes on and says, you know, at the same time, The Hague has issued a warrant for the arrest of Vladimir Putin, who basically said, yeah, suck it, and just went on a diplomatic mission to China to sew up his relationship there. But George W. Bush for the invasion of Iraq, you know, what we did to Afghanistan, all of the other war crimes that have been carried out, what would truly be considered war crimes. And I'm not throwing that around casually. I'm talking about using the standard of The Hague and what they just did to Vladimir Putin as the most recent standard, which I agree with, by the way, for anybody that thinks that I'm, you know, a Russia defender for some reason. It's a good call. And, you know, sadly, there's no teeth to that. Nothing's ever going to come of it. But even from a performative standpoint, where was that type of investigation when we murdered hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and sent our soldiers to a meaningless mission to try and take over a country that, you know, yes, we ousted the leader, but then we wound up wasting resources, human lives, you know, destroying infrastructure, only to basically hand it over to whom we consider to be our biggest enemy in the area, and that's Iran. So Iran has more control and of a relationship with Iraq today than they did prior because of us. So well done us. But he calls into question what it is you know, what are the standards for criminality in the United States, and, you know, and how much influence we still have on the international stage to prevent things like The Hague from condemning our presidents.
But is this not just like what they do in TV shows when they're trying to, you know, they know they have something, but they don't, they have one small crime. They have to get the evidence for the big crime. So they just like book them on the small thing. That way they buy more time. Like, is that not just what
for
we're
Trump?
Doing? Yeah.
I don't think so in this case, only because these are isolated charges from a very specific DA's office related to, you know, the crimes in the city. He's also going to face other charges through that DA's office as well. It's not one of those, like, we're building a case that could, you know, take him out by combining all of it, because these are all in separate jurisdictions and very different parts of the criminal system.
Yeah, I guess I mean just more like preventing him from running again. Like, let's just throw whatever sticks and bog him down with anything so he can't run again. Less so.
So bogging him down, absolutely.
Yeah, less so being like, eh, we don't care about the other shit. I feel like, of course, most people would love to get him for that, but yeah. It's more complicated. It's easier to just say you bribed someone, essentially. So let's do that first and break ground. So
no question, this is the low hanging fruit that's going to distract him and financially hurt him.
Yeah, I don't disagree with what Scahill is saying. I just feel like I think it's different. It's a different scenario. And the likelihood of us also going after him for like, or any war criminals is low because it's done. They don't, you know.
Yeah,
and
I think,
care.
You know, he also pointed out like, and hey, this isn't just to say, well, look at what George Bush did or look at what Obama did with extrajudicial killings and killing of an American citizen. That's one of the things that Jeremy Scahill really explored more than anybody in his book, The Dirty Wars, is the fact that Anwar al-Awlaki, I believe was his name, was still an American citizen living abroad. But we assassinated him without congressional authorization or any under that very loose authorization of military force. But he was also pointing out with Trump, like the assassination of General Soleimani in Iraq was as criminal as it gets and could have, in another circumstance, led to World War III. But, you know, Trump skates on that, but we're going to get him for hush money. He's basically
care.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a moral relativist argument. It's just sort of saying like, you know, we really have a hard time standing up to the hypocrisy that we have, and the things that we focus on are just bizarre.
Yeah, people, as long as it's murder somewhere else, even if it's one of our people, as long as it doesn't take place here, we don't care. You know,
that's right.
Most people don't even fucking care that he bribed someone. It's just easy.
Absolutely. Like, absolutely.
Realistically, I don't care. I don't care.
No. Nope.
You know, I care about murder. So when I, you know, obviously our own fuckers are on the same side as us, and wishing one would be tried and not the other. But like, fucking care, bribe whoever you want.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So the last headline, it's actually a twofer. I've got something from, let's see, oilprice.com, which is something I subscribe to alerts for. And another one from just to sort of back up a point from the oil price article about U.S. crude oil production. And that is from the Department of Energy in the United States. So these two together, sort of tackling this, the new information that came out from OPEC, who announced cuts of 1.6 million barrels per day through the end of the year. So this sent oil prices up in recent days. Now, remember that I promised you that oil prices would increase this year because Wall Street would manifest it. And the reason they would manifest it is their never-ending search for yield. So it's an easy way for them to pocket some yield while the equity markets are kind of dormant and they're not catching yield and, you know, maybe much in the bond market, which is increasing, but not enough to satiate them, because on the other side, remember, all of the leverage that they had just got a lot more expensive. If you go back to our oil price pieces, the crude oil piece that we did, and we did one follow-up on it as well, it's as simple as this. Wall Street, by just merely forecasting that oil prices are going to increase, will actually send the market in that direction. So the same people in charge of saying this is the number that it's going to hit are actually laying the bets that it's going to hit that number. And it's been that way now for a few decades, but they really, really got good at this in the mid-early 2000s, when they decided to just start playing fast and loose with oil prices every time there was a dip in the stock market. I mean, they're like directly correlated. So the OPEC thing to me actually gives them perfect cover for this. And there is a rationale here. So if they cut supply, then obviously, and demand stays the same, then obviously prices are going to increase. But the point that I wanted to make with the two articles that I attached is that Venezuela's daily capacity has already increased by 300,000 barrels per day, and the U.S. has similarly increased by 400,000 barrels per day. So just these two cases alone make up for nearly half of what OPEC is projected to cut in supply. There will be others to fill the gap. So remember, oil is fungible. It goes all over the world. It's not just like, you know, so if one person stops producing a barrel and another person increases by a barrel, then it's a net neutral for the oil supply generally in the world. We're going to make up that supply. There's a very aggressive attempt to increase oil production in the United States and other places as well. And you'll see that it'll catch up. But demand is kind of the same. So we already have projected and baked in the growth in demand from China into the existing numbers. So the supply cuts in theory would take it down, but we're going to add just as much to it. If oil prices increase the way that I think they're going to increase, I think you'll see oil begin to approach by the summer months again, get up to that $95 to $100 barrel range. And I'm telling you right now that demand does not warrant that type of price increase. Also, there's downward pressure because of the competitive fuel in natural gas is right back down to historic lows again. So all of this stuff should work itself out. Trust me, if you see a spike like that that gets up from the low 80s up to the mid to high 90s, it's just pure speculative greed from Wall Street. And on that note, why don't we get into some feedback? So we had some interesting feedback here. It's the first piece that maybe you can read out. It's from a listener that I don't really recognize.
Yeah,
99. So maybe if you could just read this out and give some context to it, that'd be great. This is, by the way, about our creative destruction episode.
Yes, this is from someone called Mani Fasis.
Mani Feces?
Yeah, Money Feces.
Money Feces. Yeah. Okay. All right.
So Money Feces says, I posit that we really have no idea whether we've reached an innovation ceiling because we still haven't created a society in which several groups, women, Black, Hispanic, poor, have been given the opportunity to fully participate in the industries we typically associate with innovation. For example, men hold 73.3% of tech jobs, women 26.7%. In the U.S. tech sector, 62% of jobs are held by white Americans, while Black Americans hold 7% of jobs, with Latin Americans holding 8% of jobs. This person delivers an excellent keynote, or an entire keynote. That was a Freudian slip. I said excellent. Ugh, gross. They deliver an entire excellent keynote where they highlight the vast, brilliant innovation that Black people have delivered to America and the world, contributions often whitewashed or erased completely, and invariably accomplished in the face of discrimination and oppression. One can only imagine what this world could be if they alone were ever given the same opportunities, resources, and respect that have historically been given only to their often wildly mediocre white and male counterparts.
I can't help but maybe take a little bit of offense to the wildly mediocre white male counterparts, Mr. Feces.
I think you're projecting.
I might be.
Just like a white man would do.
I might be. It's a little bit all about me, right? Feel like I'm losing power in this country and we need to take it back. Here, here. Here's for the white man. Wow. Geez, that just slipped out. My God. So obviously this was the great Mani Feces contributing as he always does, a brilliant little nugget. And by the way, you can find some of his lectures online. Mani Feces, I'll give you an opportunity here to interject on the audio version at least and tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, find out all about it at manifaces.com.
But if you're not following Mani Feces on Instagram,
at Mani Feces Official,
or Facebook,
at Mani Feces Official,
or the Twitters,
at Mani Feces,
or any of the other places that he appears to catch a glimpse of some of his work, I can tell you this much: my man's being flown all over the country to give these lectures. So we are with royalty. So now we have like half of our team on tour, basically. So you got Mani Feces being picked up, sent all around the country to college campuses to deliver these lectures about hip hop in America and excellence that comes from it. And then you've got Tom McGovern in the Wolves of Glendale touring all around the country in support of his band.
Mm, amazing. Thought I was on tour. I thought it was an announcement.
Do you want to announce it now?
Yes.
You want to tell everybody what you're going to do?
Yes, I will be embarking on my summer concert spree starting in 2 weeks.
What's the first one?
I don't say the name of my band.
Oh, it's for them almost exclusively, or you must have a whole range of festivals this summer, yeah?
Only one so far. The other festival that I went to last year is the same weekend as my friend's wedding, so I can't go. I also have like 40 fucking weddings this year.
Oh, you're in the zone right now.
I know. I'm getting old, and someone needs to just marry.
That's not old.
Can someone marry me?
All right, unfuckers, you heard the call.
Yeah, can 99. You guys, what if we bid for charity? And it'll be like Love is Blind on Netflix. I don't even have to meet you. You can bid on me sight unseen. This basically is Love is Blind.
Yeah, pretty much.
Season 5 out now. No, it's season 4, sorry.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, I've been watching it.
Apparently.
Yes. Yeah, I'm on tour. I have to fund this tour myself, though, unfortunately.
I am forever on tour and also have to self-fund my tour, but it's not for me. It's for youth sports.
Pervert.
Yeah, it just follows youth teams all around the country. Yeah, it's really scary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
and now people know what you look like, so.
Yeah, that's true. If you see me on the sidelines.
Call 911.
I'm not supposed to be there. Okay, so 99 has also given me, and Manny Faces, thank you for that interjection. We appreciate it. 99 has kind of grouped two things together. One is from Sam E. The other is from Iowa Badger, both following similar lines. I'll read a little bit from both of them. Sam says, I do have one question for Max relating to some recent news regarding the possibility of the yuan. In a foreseeable future, is it possible that it could replace the U.S. dollar? And Iowa Badger similarly says, I just heard a frustrated business person in an unguarded moment when I heard Western Chorus frogs coming from the speakerphone because the person was, quote, working from home that day. After I criticized China for the items you list below in this email, I was told that one of the business person's family members works within federal law enforcement and indicated that they expected their children to be speaking Chinese and that Saudi Arabia is thinking of switching to the Chinese currency as their main currency. So this was seen as a global trend and that India and China were going to be taking over. Paranoia, half-truths will need to be sorted out by the super sleuths of UNFTR. Both of them bring up modern monetary theory, ask what that portends for us and the rest of the world. So I will reiterate the stance that I took, I believe, last week, which is getting involved in diplomatic negotiations is one thing. And China has definitely supplanted us, first of all, in Africa. They're so far ahead of us, and they're making inroads into Latin America as well, which I think is more problematic and something that is entirely avoidable because, you know, we've got natural relations and, you know, hemispheric conditions that make it easier for us to bolster the Latin American economies and just do more with them. But that's for another day. The issue with China, yes, they're giving out low-cost loans. We talked about how they're now basically, you know, competing with the IMF at this point. Like very much so competing with the IMF and getting close to their dollar total. Some of them are just giving away as grants to help build infrastructure so that their companies can come in and do business in these areas. Very similar to the path that we created and we forged, for the last 100 years. This is all smart diplomatic stuff that will help them enhance their trade capabilities, will certainly lead to more, I would think, stronger alliances, stronger political alliances as well. But, you know, first of all, from a political standpoint, consider the actors that they're aligning with. In pulling together Saudi Arabia and Iran, they have done something fairly seismic. So I'm impressed from a political standpoint, from a diplomatic standpoint. But think about the actors that they're getting involved with. The MBS administration, if you want to call it that, the kingdom in Saudi Arabia, is as corrupt as they come. Look no further than the murder and subsequent cover-up of Jamal Khashoggi. Just, I mean, absolutely brutal, and we did nothing to it. They for some reason, want to embarrass the Biden administration. I haven't really figured that piece out because...
I think most people do.
Yeah, I mean, is that just sport for them? I think it is because they know that they've got China in their back pocket, and so they can just start fucking with us.
Just wait. He'll fall again.
They're doing it with our weapons. They're doing it with our money. I mean, it's even more embarrassing. So if you just want to look at it from a real politique standpoint and a Cold War kind of lens, it's so insulting that they're cozying up with China and starting to do more business there, considering that we basically built their entire economy. And we've given them diplomatic cover. We've given them, you know, cover with our, you know, military operations and all of that.
Isn't that kind of like an ethnocentric view, though? Like, we made you, so you owe us. Like, aren't they allowed to I'm not saying that they
without
should,
a doubt,
you know, get back at us or whatever, like you're saying, but they should be able to stretch their legs and make big boy decisions if they want to.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of that came under the Trump administration when people realized that maybe, you know, the emperor had no clothes and they had to. We necessitated everybody looking around for new partnerships. So that was the first. And again, I'm characterizing this as like a misstep because I don't really care about the alliances in the Middle East because it's never really come back on us. Yes, 9/11 happened. And we could go down that rabbit hole as well about the reasons and the rationale for that and the Soviet involvement in that, what happened in Afghanistan, the fact that, you know, so much of this was carried out by Saudi expats and what have you. We've done a terrible job managing those relationships if you look at it just from a humanitarian standpoint. If you look at it, again, from a ruthless, cold-hearted Cold War perspective, we have been able to pretty much have our way and keep alliances in check that benefited us the most. And, you know, using Israel as proxy, using Saudi Arabia as proxy. And now those things are, you know, becoming undone. So I think it started under Trump. They want to embarrass Biden by basically, I don't want to call it the biting the hand that feeds them.
Biden,
the hand that feeds them. But it is kind of embarrassing. The fact that Biden went there almost kind of hat in hand, continued selling arms to them, and there were no repercussions despite his tough talk in the campaign trail, you know, for the murder of Khashoggi, is embarrassing enough. And I just think that we projected weakness in that respect. But again, I don't care.
You know what the problem is?
Yeah.
We keep changing leadership and they don't. We need a dictatorship.
Yeah, there we go.
If we just all had the same leaders forever, we wouldn't have to.
I have a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
As to who should be our dictator.
I'm not sure if it's the Terminator or Bernie Sanders.
That's clearly Bernie. Oh, I almost knocked my microphone over in this authoritarian manner of speaking.
You're out of practice. It's a little.
What?
It's a little Arnie.
What?
Yeah.
I was watching so many hearings. He was taking on Howard Schultz.
Okay, that's getting better.
It's getting better?
A little bit.
Millionaires and billionaires. That's how I have to start. Yeah, that's exactly. How I have to cue myself in. Mm-hmm. Millionaires and billionaires. I would opt for a 10-year dictatorship under Bernie to straighten everything out.
Yeah,
and then we could go back to normal.
I don't know, man. I don't know if it's going to work. We need to, maybe we can start the singularity early and just keep Bernie, like, alive.
Chop off his head, like, connect it to a mainframe.
And I mean, we can wait till, like, we don't have to do it right now. We can wait, but that way we can keep it going and just have him forever.
So, okay, so Bernie in perpetuity. I like it.
We both said in perpetuity.
Yeah, well, singularity, right?
Yes.
Okay, so there's the aligning with bad actors angle of this. Then there is the financial part of this thing. The one reason that we will remain for our lifetimes the world's reserve currency, once again, is that our economy still is double the size of China and their population is tenfold what ours is, if not more, eightfold, maybe tenfold, something like that, right? We are a juggernaut per capita. Nobody comes close or has ever come close to being this financially dominant in the world. We also have the most robust legal system when it comes to financial matters. Again, I can criticize the criminal justice system till kingdom come. From a financial standpoint, a regulatory standpoint, and a rules and a structural standpoint, our banking and finance system is the most advanced and is the most secure. Then you have the fact that if you think about China's economy for a second, this is kind of circuitous, but it'll make sense in a minute. If you think about China's economy, so much of their economy depends upon the health and the growth of the consumer sector in the United States. So yes, there are other big actors out there, but you're not going to see the Middle East suddenly double, triple, quadruple in population and bring all of those people into the middle class. They don't have the legal structure for it. They don't have the geographic infrastructure for it. It doesn't lend itself. They don't have the natural resources for it. We are a very, very interesting use case because of our size, because of our location, the fact that we border the Atlantic and the Pacific, and we have trade routes that go all over the world. We truly still are the center of the world. That's not to say that China is not going to be competitive. They will absolutely be competitive with us. But while they, here's the most important part, while they have an authoritarian government, which they do, and they lock down personal liberties and civil liberties, and they have a centralized, centrally planned economy and fully aligned political structure and military structure, no one will ever trust that they have the capacity to become the world's reserve currency. Nobody. It's not going to happen, not within our lifetime. So I would not stress about that. Will our children speak Chinese? Maybe they should.
I feel like they've been saying that for years. Like, if Mandarin's the business language.
Yeah. If you go to China, you can get by in English. How about that? If you're doing business in China, if you go to
most
almost
places.
Anywhere, it is the language of business in the world, period.
English?
English is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, people, other countries just have better systems and they teach their children multiple languages. We should all of our kids just should be bilingual at a minimum.
Yes.
So.
But if you think, like, so as a child of the 80s, all the movies that came out that were about American businesses were about the failure of American business and the rise of Japan. We were all going to be speaking Japanese when I was, you know, when I was young. In the 50s and 60s, it was everybody's going to be speaking Russian when I was not alive. 99. So we always come up with these type of boogeymen. This is a very, you know, all this, you know, our kids are going to be speaking Chinese is a very cheap thing. But if you want your kids to be like in the finance sector and be or manufacturing and live all over the world and be part of the global economy and internationalists, speaking Chinese probably isn't a terrible thing.
Yes. Learn Chinese. Well, you have to pick a dialect. So do research.
Right.
Learn Spanish. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe throw in like German for fun. That's such a fun language.
It's a little harsh. I had a professor in college who he was a Brit, but he learned German and said that he was amazed at how many countries he could get by not speaking, but understanding based on the German language.
It's probably like Spanish and Italian.
Yeah.
They share a lot of words.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure there's a lot of languages like that.
Yeah. English is not one of them.
No. It's when I think about learning other languages and how hard they sound, knowing that ours is also really hard. Like, I gave up on Spanish during conjugation. Like, I took it for, 6 years, and I was, like, in honor Spanish. And then I was like, I don't want to conjugate any fucking verbs. So I dropped out into regulars, and we were still learning, like, vocab. It was great. I was, like, an all-star. I had, you know, but I was just like, this is too much for me.
I speak dog Spanish. Everything's in the present tense. Nothing happened in the past tense. Can't talk about what's about to happen. I can get by in any Spanish country so long as we're talking about something happening right now. That's it.
I can recognize words at this point, and that's about it.
Like, yeah.
I dug out a Spanish word. It came out of nowhere. Like, you know, and sometimes you don't, your brain just says something. I was trying to think of something. I don't even remember what it was, but I was like, wow, how deep was that in there? It's like 15 years buried, and I managed to pull it out. So occasionally, if I went to Spanish, the country of Spanish, I'd be fucked. Just have to hope someone took pity on me.
I'd like to visit Spanish, too.
Me, too. I want to visit Spanish. I want to visit French, German, all of the countries.
Don't forget about Russian.
Of course.
We know how you feel about the Russians.
I want to visit Latin.
Yes, all of it.
Gaelic.
Mm-hmm.
That weird language Scottish people speak.
Yeah.
Scott. It's a thing. I love listening to them speak that. It's like, because you can understand every fourth word.
Can our friend speak it?
I think he can understand it, but I don't think he can speak it. Because it's like a different dialect, and there are just words that are, it's like Gaelic. Like, some of the words will overlap. But then you'll just be like, what the fuck did you just say?
Every once in a while, Bobby McDeal send us something, you know, like a toast in Gaelic or whatever it is. And it's just like, okay, yeah, whatever you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget that newsletter this week. Check out Bobby's little story.
Yeah, it's all time.
He does that for us every once in a while. It's neat. All right, let's head over to social media and then we'll hit the YouTubes. We had a comment on Instagram.
Yeah, so about we didn't have much feedback on the Hokul episode other than people just being like, this is appalling. But JMS_0924 said, I didn't know that the land donation was during the Biden administration in 2018.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, so the process started prior to the Biden administration.
Wait, was during Biden administration 2018? He wasn't president in 2018.
Correct. Right. Okay. So that's the point they're making here. Like, we're laying this all on Hochul and Biden, but it actually it predated them. So,
right? I see. So I don't know that it. So they're saying like I read it as didn't.
Okay. So, so let me clarify a couple things here. Yes, the process started before. That was at Honeywell's discretion, and obviously the Interior Department and DC under Cuomo, like, nobody cared. They were like, yeah, that's fine if it you know, gets rid of a headache for you. What I was objecting to with the Hochul administration managing it, before we talk about Biden, is the fact that she took credit for that being basically, she was standing on this as like, look what I did. I gave you 1,000 acres and you have the audacity to question me and my intentions toward Native people. It was the one thing that she had to stand on, in her words. So wasn't even her idea in the first place, but it is her DEC that is now managing the details around the land transfer. With respect to the Department of the Interior, the reason it's, once again, more insulting under Biden is that we have Deb Haaland, a Native person who is supposedly looking out for Native rights, not only coming in to defend the Montaukets for their recognition. She did not step in when it was appealed when Hochul took Seneca money to build the Buffalo Bills Stadium. They appealed to the Department of the Interior, which is the only recourse after losing to 3 non-Native judges in New York State that were appointed by Republicans who did not see the escrow money in the Seneca's favor, despite it being in plain language in the contract that this was no longer their obligation to pay. And good faith, the Seneca Nation was putting that money aside. And when things were going their way in the courts, which it never, ever, ever fucking does in New York, and I'm sure it's the same in other states, they petitioned the Interior Department and went directly to Deb Haaland, with whom they have a relationship, and they got silence in return. So here again, they have to negotiate with the Department of the Interior. Deb Haaland's name is officially all over this because things can start in prior administrations, but whenever it gets done, they get the credit for it. Hochul is going to take credit for this. Biden is going to take credit for this. And what's insulting about Biden taking credit for it is that it's going to have Deb Haaland's seal of approval on this thing. And she is going to be very much part of the negotiation and has been part of the negotiation that indemnifies Honeywell in perpetuity. There's that word again. Mm-hmm. Perpetuity. So say it a lot. So you, JMS, you are correct. But that's some further context about that. So now heading over to the YouTubes, we've got WinHax, who wins the YouTubes for the week with a Get Smart deep cut by saying, Max, don't get smart on us and turn 99 into a VTuber. We don't need another chaos situation on our hands. Let's keep things under control and avoid any shoe phone emergencies. Hear, hear. Well done. You win the day, WinHax.
I can't hear you, Gladys. There's a guy talking into a shoe.
It should be on in a few minutes, Chief.
I don't know. It looks like a shoe phone.
Not yet, Chief.
Gladys wants to know where you got the shoe.
Control issue.
He says it's control issue.
Not yet, Chief.
What's control?
Top secret.
He says it's top secret.
Here he comes now, Chief.
Hey, she wants to know what your job is.
Hello, Gladys. I'm a spy.
Well, if I told you once, I told you 1,000 times. Ask a stupid question, you get a stupid answer.
And High Point 40 Cal said what?
So this was responding to the capitalism video and specifically the qualm that we don't understand capitalism. So High Point said, I don't buy the this isn't real capitalism argument. The foundation is still there despite what has been piled on top of it. The labor class sells its labor to the owner class while keeping wages as low as possible so that they may profit so to enrich their own lives off our backs. And to quote JT from Second Thought, quote, you wouldn't call stage 4 cancer a different disease just because it's stage 4. It's still cancer, end quote. We're in stage 4 capitalism.
Yeah, I can jive with that.
JT from Degrassi. Just wondering. I'm wondering if it's the same person.
Could be JT that used to work in our production department.
I don't know that
in
person.
In which case it would sound like this. Yo, well, you would call stage 4 a different disease because it's just stage 4. It's still cancer.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
No? Okay. Boy, he was funny. That was back in the day when Manny Faces was in house and there was a guy named JT and sat in the pit with the other people and it was his own thing.
Why do people with J names always end up with like JT, JP, JC? It's like no other letter does that
yeah.
as much.
You're right.
Food for thought.
You're always right, 99. So
hold that thought.
Hold that thought indeed. We have a lot to cover.
I meant that I'm always right.
Yeah, just hold that always, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, I like this. So the point I was making in the capitalism videos was that what we have technically is not capitalism, more as a point to drive home that the core tenets of it have been abandoned. Some of the structure is still there, and that we're headed towards more of an inverted totalitarian model where a number of large corporations control not just the economic underpinnings of the country, but the political process as well. But yes, it is derived from capitalism. There's no question about it. So stage four capitalism is a great way to put it. I think that's a wonderful comment, and I appreciate you sending it in. Now, Anders B., who's a serial commenter on YouTube, a great follower of both the pod and the show now on video, commented on the Kerner Report video explaining the significance of the 60s congressional report on race relations in the United States. This is not something that I did on the pod, but it's just a little vignette that we had started to cover important pieces of history that kind of like help build out the curriculum that people should know if they're interested in. So again, if you're interested in the 60s, race relations, how LBJ was kind of navigating the murky waters of the civil rights era, the Kerner Report is kind of like the seminal congressional report. This is before lobbyists got involved. This is before people, you know, would try to influence the outcome of a report like that. It is really raw, really honest. Anders said, I'd never heard about this. I'm always glad to learn more from you and FTR. BSAG also seconded this and said, so, you know, hopefully we're onto something and we can provide a lot of value with these mini drops. I have another one coming up. I don't know when it's going to drop, but it's going to be on NSC 68, which is sort of like the
Nintendo system from 1968.
Exactly right. Nintendo 1968. Thank you, 99. Mm-hmm. So look out for that one. And what did Dan M. have to say? Love Dan M.
Yeah, so I guess we had asked Dan to clarify a point, and Dan followed up. So they said, thanks for using the
Red right hand.
Ah, yes. Oh, I don't, RRH is hard to say together. So yes, thanks for using the red right hand theme again. To clarify, quote, labor in the 30s, I mean the worldwide trends in labor organizing and reaction to austerity following the crash in 29, generating nationalism and feeding into the rise of fascism. Labor at the time enjoyed support from socially progressive organizations who advocated strikes and opposed involvement in the burgeoning war in Europe. In the U.S., the Trotskyist socialist and communist movements in alignment with worldwide socialist and communist movements largely springing from workers' movements were soon to all be equated with Nazism and Stalinism and demonized in World War II and its aftermath. Feels to me like we're queuing up a reboot. If you listen for it, the next Red Scare is always underway. Sorry, sometimes when I read these, it's like so hard to know the flow of the person who wrote it. Mm-hmm. So that's why sometimes I read them like shit. So I apologize.
I don't think you read it like shit at all.
It wasn't my best. I'm just acknowledging it. It's okay to acknowledge when you make a little oopsie.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay. So Dan, this is a thank you for clarifying. And that totally clarifies the point you were making, and fully in agreement with that. It's a good jumping off point for me to tease out. I don't yet know how I'm going to organize it. So I'm in the process and have been for a few months of trying to answer a question in my mind that every time, the deeper I get into it, I sort of, you know, find different answers to it. And that is, what is socialism? So I have a lot of different ways to approach this, but you're keying in on a time period that's obviously super critical for this. When socialism came out of the theoretical, you know, and sort of left the mind of Marx and Engels and then floated into the universe where other theorists began to build upon that and project what form socialism could take. When we say that, you know, this is a socialist program or socialism is used as, you know, in a pejorative sense to criticize, you know, anything that, you know, Democrats might be doing or that progressives might be doing. What do we really mean by that? And it got me wondering, like, what do we mean by that? Not, you know, we know that it's, you know, used to cast dispersions on any sort of ideas of social welfare and reform, or, you know, and people know to say the top level stuff like, you know, redistribution of wealth or, you know, live in a welfare state. that socialism basically just leads you to Russia that already failed. You know, look at the Soviet Union, look at what happened in Venezuela, et cetera. So I've been on kind of a learning journey, which has been great fun, but it's been frustrating because there, again, so many tributaries of thought, so many different theorists over the years that have built on one another that I felt it was important to kind of go back to the beginning of it. So beginning with the Communist Manifesto and going all the way through to newer forms of democratic socialism that we've seen take root, where capitalism falls both from a, I guess, from a theorist perspective, but also in real terms, dealing with the fallout of capitalism, but also the good things that capitalism has built in order to take us out of this feudal society. There's so much there. So central characters is something that I'm building a narrative around. We've got, you know, Eugene Debs, Rosa Luxemburg, Trotsky, Lenin, you know, how Lenin gave way to Stalinism.
McCarthy, Ringo.
Ringo. Right. Yeah. Lenin, McCartney, Ringo, and of course, George is my favorite, mm-hmm. I think.
That's why I was throwing you off.
Yep. Thank you.
Don't forget the fifth Beatle.
Pete Best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Lenin, L-E-N-I-N, McCarthy.
So I've always liked Stephen Dorff. And apparently he's kind of a prick, maybe what have you. But he played Pete Best in... Was it Backbeat? Is that a Beatles movie about the origin? Something like that.
I don't know. I just know that was a Newsbeat.
Oh, there you go. That's right.
Is that what
too.
You're thinking of?
No. Was Stephen Dorff in Backbeat? Shall we?
Sure.
I'm just going to look that up really quickly. Backbeat movie. 1994. There you go. Oh, God, he didn't play Pete Best. He played Stu Sutcliffe. I'm an idiot. So, yes.
Dumbass.
Stuart Sutcliffe. Really interesting story. Died of an aneurysm. He was an artist. He was in the band, and they were like, you know, keep going with us. And he was like, no, I'm going to paint and do that shit instead. And they were starting to take off. They kept saying, well, you know, come back into the band. He's like, I'm really just kind of loving painting. And then died of an aneurysm.
I like the interview where they ask if Ringo's the best drummer in the world. And John says he's not even the best drummer in the Beatles.
Ouch.
They're all shady
so,
to him.
So biting.
Yeah.
Oof. Ouch.
We started that documentary, the one on Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah?
We watched it like at Thanksgiving and then Christmas of last year. And then like we were like, how fucking long is this? Every episode was 2.5 hours.
I can't believe I haven't seen it. And I think it was my aversion to subscription services that I just said, nope.
I lost my roommate. You can have her log in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay. What's her name?
I'm not going to say her name.
Do we have a name for her?
Maybe at some point we did. I don't remember.
Ooh.
Sorry.
That's a must. What was your nickname for Mama?
99's Mom.
Just that?
Maybe it was 100. I don't remember.
She's a honey?
Well, ew.
She's a honey.
Well, because if my sister's 101 and I'm 99.
Yeah, could be.
So...
She could just be one. She started it all.
Sorry to my dad. Who has no number.
No number for dad. Nope.
He's like a guest star, you know? He's not in like the featured day players. Like,
got it.
They're not bumped up to like episode regular yet. You know, that would be if they came on the show, but they're like,
yeah,
you know, on Wikipedia, they'd be in like the second set.
But not highlighted.
No, I think they'd have a blue link.
You think?
I think so. If anything, it would take you to like, a specific
is
episode they were in.
Father.
Yeah, something like that. But like, yeah, like okay. lower down, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get right.
So anyway, that's my way of saying that I wanted to actually start the year with this really great series on socialism. And then it all fell apart, but distracted by getting YouTube off the ground, all of the other nonsense that happens in the world. But mostly because I'm just so deep into all of the research and realized that I was a little insecure about not having a great answer to a very basic question. Well, what is socialism?
But it's like, what is art?
It really is like that.
It's philosophical.
It you really is like that.
You know,
truly.
So it's not an insecurity. It's an opinion.
You know, but I'm so forceful in the way I talk about capitalism and, you know, and the generations of capitalism and where we're trending towards and, you know, how it's broken apart from its original philosophy. That I was like, you know, can I get there with socialism? So I consider myself probably closer to democratic socialism. But then I'm like, is that even okay to say if I don't really get the origins of the philosophy, and it's not. And
because we haven't seen it in its truest form.
Correct. And there may not be a true form, and that's part of where I'm getting hung up.
I'm pretty sure there's at least a few original Star Treks that, like, and they have, like, socialist paradise societies. And then, you know, the crew comes in and, like, fucks it all up because Kirk fucks some lady. And then, like, one of the, every episode... But check out that for maybe some inspiration.
Oh, that'd just, then they'll never get these out if I start going down a Star Trek rabbit hole, and I'm not a Trekkie, so I'd be starting from scratch. It'd
yeah,
be no
I
good.
Mean, the prime directive is don't interfere, and all they do is interfere. It's the best. And then once in a while, especially Picard, he'll be like, we can't interfere with the prime directive. And I'm like, what have you been doing the last, you know, fucking 30 millennia? Always interfering. It's impossible. If they were not to interfere, they'd just be on their ship all the time. You know?
You are nerding out in a big way.
Well, I'm just saying, I actually think there's a lot of good political allegories in there.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. Okay. We have a pronunciation correction. Hi, Max. Thanks for the mention of my comment. This is somebody that I refer to as Lane S.
I'm surprised I didn't catch that.
If I could just pick on the pronunciation of my name, Ian is the Gaelic spelling of Ian. So it's pronounced that way, not Lane, but loving the work for you and the team. I appreciate that.
I knew it was Ian. I didn't even hear you say Lane.
Oh, yeah, I
sorry,
did.
Sorry, Ian. No. I should have been your ally.
It's okay.
Lorenzo A. wants to know what the second to last book on your bookshelf is. Blank of Free Markets?
Yes.
The Illusion of
Here
Free Markets.
Here we go.
By Bernie H. You think he likes being called that?
I sense he wouldn't mind. He'd maybe get a chuckle out of it. Mm. So full disclosure, it's one of my favorite books. So these are my formative books. We've got The Family by Jeff Charlotte, People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, Dark Money by Jane Mayer, A Mencken Christomathy.
That's just because you like the word Christomathy.
I love the word Christomathy, and I do love H.L. Mencken. He's a little problematic, and we can get into that another time. But The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. The Futures by Emily Lambert, which is a book that nobody refers to, but really ignited my passion for the commodities markets. Capital and 21st Century by Thomas Piketty, which is a reference book, not something you can just sit down and read. And I actually have something called the Pocket Piketty, which is just a little digest that helps me translate it.
Cute.
And The Illusion of Free Markets, which is on my list for... Yes, it made that bookshelf, but I'm going to say it's probably top three for me because it really helped me understand the impact of the Chicago School, really helped me contextualize Milton Friedman's work and how all of it is really based on a fundamental misunderstanding and mischaracterization of the markets.
If you're subscribed to the newsletter, there is a section at the bottom with some book love suggestions, and I've been swapping them out. I mean, we're only on week two, but last week I did the episode's book love suggestions in there. This week I picked some related ones. I picked The Essential Kerner Report by Jelani Cobb.
Yeah.
I believe that's how it's said or spelled. I put in The Color of Money, The Color of Law, and Queer Injustice. So
great books.
Yeah, just trying to, if there isn't a book love, trying to keep it themed. And whoever wrote in about the Kerner Report, you should pick up that book. So
yeah,
check it out.
Dig it. Thank you for doing that. Illusion of Free Markets, again, fundamental for me. I am about a quarter of the way through. I keep having to abandon it because of the socialism books that I'm reading. But I'm a quarter of the way through Critique and Praxis by Bernard Harcourt, which is his most recent book. It's probably the most difficult book that I've ever read. I love every bit of it, but it's one of those things where you really have to pay attention. You really have to concentrate because the language is not, it's just such a departure from what I'm used to. He's very, and it's not that he's inaccessible. It's just that it's very academic and it is the language of philosophy, which is not a comfortable language for me. So
call up 101.
I could. Yeah. I could say, hey, translate this. She could be my like human chat GPT.
Yeah.
Right. Just digest this book and translate it for me.
Yeah. I like to brag about her. She was a double major in philosophy and classics.
My goodness.
At a very smart university for smart people.
Love it.
Definitely much smarter than my dumb college. But yeah. Oh,
what you make of it.
Why can't I be self-deprecating? I love school.
Yeah.
Why can't I call it dumb? College. I should be allowed.
College is what you make of it. I truly believe that.
Life's what you make it. So let's make it rock.
That's how winning is done.
Mine was Hannah Montana.
Okay. Mine was Rocky.
I know.
Okay. So the full disclosure part of this thing is because I've had some correspondence with Bernie H., mm-hmm. with Bernard Harcourt, who was very responsive. I promised that he said he would come on the show, but I said I would only have him on when I finished Critique and Praxis, thereby shooting myself in the foot because I wanted to be really fully prepared. I'm not going to blow the opportunity to have a great discussion and a very prepared discussion with somebody as accomplished as Bernard Harcourt. So that's the second to last book on the shelf. And BSAG, Finn, Norma, and Anders, by the way, all gave the thumbs up on our show notes format here on YouTube. So we'll keep on keeping on. Anything that we can obviously add to the mix down the road, we will do that and be cognizant of it. But for right now, if you didn't notice, I completely fucked up 99's audio in the last version.
That's why they liked it.
God willing, it's good now.
They said, oh, great. I don't have to listen to her.
No, it sounded like you were talking through a tin can. It's my fault entirely. So hopefully that's fixed. Now let's get into coffee donations. Heather K bought us 5 coffees. I missed you all. I took a few months break. Totally fine. To finally flee Nebraska and have landed in SoCal. Heather, nicely done. I would say it's an upgrade. Finally getting caught up and love the YouTube videos. Oh, yay, fun. Even if they're super vanilla. They are super vanilla. Keep doing what you do. Much love. They are vanilla.
But they're rolling back some of the cursing bylaws, so I think that's what they're referring to. I don't think they think... I mean, you are vanilla, yes.
I am vanilla, but I think it's just the straight-ahead blah, blah, blah kind of thing. I'm trying to put more, like, graphics in and shit
think,
like that.
I don't think that's what they would mean. That's, like, kind of rude to say. Like...
I should probably didn't mean that.
Yeah, I think they meant because you can't curse.
That's what I think it is. You know, because I get so sick of listening to myself and editing my own fucking face that
I get it.
Yeah. Right? You must be. I mean, how sick are you of it?
Not Jesus. In a rude way, but after years of editing stuff, other podcasts for other people we work with, mm-hmm. I was like, I can't speak to you anymore.
Right.
Like
right.
This,
it's just a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like enjoy our show in the same way as a listener as I did early on because mm-hmm. it's a lot now.
I used to love in the newspaper business the weeks that I was away. Coming back and picking up an edition and sitting and just enjoying it as a reader, not having been as part of any of the backstory or the editing of it. It was wonderful. Mm. So I get that feeling.
Mine's a little less fun because I come back and I'm worried if something was not done to my organizational psychosis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's on me.
I had that person, an associate publisher who did all that type of worrying as well. So I was able to kind of mentally check out. Oh, but
good,
also, I don't have the same I don't have the same attention to detail that you do. So that's your curse.
You're telling me. Well, Will Watkins.
Hold for it.
I am William Wallace.
Bought 3 coffees. Hey team, just wanted to let you know I see all the hard work you're doing and I appreciate you in this fight. Thank you for the shout out a couple episodes ago. And Will Watkins' art can be found on Instagram at flatliner74. So I'll link that. So follow all of Will Watkins' beautiful artwork and maybe he posts some, I don't know, like cool selfies or something.
Hey, unfuckers, seriously, do that. Right. Everybody go to if you have Instagram, go there and give old Will a follow.
Also follow us if you don't.
Yeah, that too.
Our Instagram, we have good engagement, but I think it's not as popular as a platform. Like, I think engagement's hard there if we're not doing, like, reels and all that stuff. It's just, it's an interesting platform. So we have not a lot of followers. We have actually the most followers on Facebook, and that's probably because it's a conversational place.
That and Knudsen has really dragged people in.
I'm not even talking about the group. I'm talking about our Facebook page itself. Like, we have over 1,000 followers.
I think some people probably came in so that they could join that group. Because, following shows and following brands and stuff like that is, I don't think a lot of people do that. But I think that group really helped kind of maybe supercharge that a little bit. I don't know.
I'm not trying to take anything away, but I believe we had that many followers before the group.
Oh, is that right?
I just truly think people like being able to comment and share and getting the updates in their feed. So, I'm sure the Facebook group has done...
Definitely led to the engagement being where it is.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. And then Twitter, we have the second most followers, but we don't use it. Doesn't seem like we ever will at this point because it doesn't appear to be getting any better. It is actively getting worse mm-hmm. by the day.
And less secure and more bugs. So, they're going to start charging everybody.
It's so nightmare. That's, dead in the water. And then, then there's Instagram. And think we have like 600-ish followers, a little less.
All right, well, get on it.
I want to get 1K. Give me 1K. I feel like when you get to 1K, you look a little more legit. Like 600 still looks a little janky.
Mm-hmm.
So like help me. Hey, you want more phone of friends? Get us more Instagram followers. So if they look at our Instagram, they're not like, who's this fucking band of nobodies? It's like, yeah, we are a band of nobodies, but we got thousands of listeners. And some of you might have Instagrams.
My family said to me recently, I think I told you this, that they said they can always tell when I've been spending time with you because I start using words like janky.
Mm.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's been with 99 again. Yeah, you know it. All right, so follow Will Hold For It.
William Wallace.
Watkins at Flatliner74. Follow us at UNFTRpod, right, on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Once again, follow me at MannyFacesOfficial and follow Tom McGovern at TomMcGovern27.
Okay, you're just going to have to read them. Go ahead. Can't see. Sorry.
Just keep your glasses on.
All right, I will.
All Around Nerd 42 is now a member. Maddie D is now a member. Pretty new to UNFTR here, and I love everything about the show, from the cheesy sound clips, clever song intro remixes, to the academic yet casual approach to your topics. You guys are killing it with your brand and your product, so I had to get in the support. And they got a caffeinated sampler. Can't wait to give these beans the business.
Maddie D, thanks for becoming a member. Let us know what you think about the beans.
Yeah. PDX Squatch is also now a member. My oldest son turned me on to UNFTR because you are saying what I've been telling him for years. Now the entire family is listening. Yo, fuck Milton Friedman.
It's a family affair.
That song triggers me because when I was in college, I was in the dark room for hours one day and my professor had put on like a CD and it just kept repeating. And that song like haunts me now because imagine hearing it because the CD was like, what, 30, 40 minutes?
First of all, okay. Unfuckers, can we talk for a second? When I was in college, in the dark room, my professor put on a CD. And I'm the old one? It's the most dated sentence I think you've ever said.
I loved being in the dark room. It was great. I would just spend hours in there printing.
Wow. That's some old shit.
In the print shop sometimes.
The print shop.
Yeah, I did printmaking.
Did you go back in time to go to college?
Mm-hmm. I did woodblock printing. I did lithos. I did etchings. I loved it.
Wow.
I was really good at it, actually. And it was fun because professors who ignored me my freshman year because I was bad at drawing because I never wanted to be like I'm not good at drawing.
Freehand, you're not?
It takes me like a really long time. Like I can sketch things.
Okay.
And I can paint a little better than I can draw, but like they would ask us to do still lifes or like self portraits and mine would just be complete garbage. I was like bad, like straight up bad. Cause I was like, I want to be a graphic designer. I don't want to learn to draw myself. No, thank you. So then all the professors ignored me. I think I've talked about this, but then I was really good at printmaking and they all were like, oh, look so dedicated. Like, and they were like, where'd she come from? And I'm like, you were my fucking teacher for an entire year and you didn't speak a single word to me.
Sons of bitches.
It was fine, though. I laughed, and then I left. That was my first college. I ghosted an entire school.
Wow.
Yeah, but I loved. But yeah, Family Affair. I can't hear it anymore.
Okay.
Because it just plays in my. I can be in that moment, listening to it over and over and over again.
I'm so happy about this. My youngest just discovered Stevie Wonder.
Oh wow.
Oh, it's so good making mixes with Stevie Wonder and just going. She's like fully.
What did fully she? Did what would she say? Like, do you know this guy? Was it one of those?
I want to play a song for you. I think you're going to love it.
Oh, sweetie.
I know.
Sweet
it's
angel.
The best. It's the best, though. I love it. Fucking TikTok, man.
Which song? What was the song on TikTok?
Oh, shoot.
It's just Superstition.
No, it's not. It's not you. She'll get there, though, for sure.
Raven Simone does a cover of it. It was big when we were on Disney Channel days.
Sir Duke.
Okay.
Which is awesome.
Interesting.
Yes. Let's get this shit queued up.
This has been in so many movies. She's never heard it before?
No.
I feel like this was in 27 Dresses. I'm going to fact check myself.
So great. Everything he did. Everything
he's
done. I know. Everything he has done is just so good. Got a great beat. You can dance to it. Hey, where do we leave this? Oh, yeah. Petey Squatch, right? And I have a question about this next one. It says Nathan Sirst is now a member. Thank you for all you do. I often feel vilified listening to your show due to the fact that I work for one of the large banks. You often call out in your podcast. Can't say I agree with all your conclusions, but please know there are lots of good people that work for these companies that are trying to make a difference. I learn so much from your show every week. Nathan Sirst has been fucking with us for a long, long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Almost an original.
Yeah.
Right?
That was them. He's re-upping his membership.
It's a re-up. I dig it. So, and listen, the cool thing about Nathan Sirst is he's very vocal. When I say he's fucked with us since the beginning, I mean, he sent in questions, comments, corrections, and coming at it from such an open-hearted and open-minded place. Like, I want to do great things in the world. This is what I do for a living. Can I square these two? And talk through some of these things over the years on the pod, but always objective. And when he's critical, he lets us know. But sort of like the model for how the unfucking community has evolved. Like, hey, I don't love the way you phrase this or what you said it. I would like to, you know, maybe can you consider this or do it this way? The fact that we've gotten to the level that we have without people just being visceral and biting, the people that, you know, people genuinely come at with a learning frame of mind. And Nathan Sirst, in my mind, is one of the premium examples of that type of just open-hearted and welcoming communication. So glad you re-upped the membership. We're very grateful for that. For anybody that is interested in becoming a member, please do go to unftr.com. And find all the wonderful things that you can do there. 99 is the magic behind the scenes that makes all of that stuff run. As we've told you before, everything is consolidated now at unftr.com. So pretty much anything that you need to know about the show or ways to get in touch with us, ways to support us, to read the essays, to look at the resources, the book list, all of that stuff is consolidated into one spot. And I can tell you this with the utmost confidence. I do believe that we might not be the biggest show, might not be the best show, might not be the most important show. There's no question in my mind that from a resource perspective, that our website as a resource is the best website in the podcasting universe. Fair?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you're not into tooting your own horn, but I mean, when you think about it, the love and the care that you put into it, the logic of it and everything that's there, the level of detail is so overkill. I gotta tell you, it's overkill. I can't say that in front of her. It's like out of control. But that's what makes this special. And that's how we've gotten to this point, is because everything is right there and it's totally transparent. So once again, gonna give a little golf clap to 99 for making things happen as she does. And tell you all to go there, unftr.com. Any closing thoughts before we leave everybody go for the weekend? We're at about $1.10 right now.
That song was not in 27 Dresses. I lied.
Oh, okay.
I can't find the only movie that's coming up that I was in was a Lyle Lyle Crocodile, which just came out. Okay. And steviewonder.org.uk has a list of movies and songs, like songs his movies his songs has been in. But it stopped at 2013, so.
Oh.
I'm SOL. The last movie on here is A Medea Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but I could swear that song, you know, it's so cinematic. You can hear that song in any movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't know. Let me know what I'm thinking of. I'll have to do more research.
All right. I think we're good. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Take it out, Stevie.
See you on Fuckers.